to others. Shalom. Okay, so we are, our agenda now is to move to the more specific issues of complicated multiple residence situations. So basically, we've been discussing the question of where to light within your residence. So yesterday, we focused largely on somebody who has a definable address, but the question is how he should relate to lighting within that address. What we'll move on to today are people whose addresses are not even necessarily clearly defined, such as students in dormitories, students in yeshivas. It's probably not so surprising that you find many more tshuvas concerning students in yeshivas than students in universities. We have a unique angle on this question, but the poskim generally talk about students in yeshivas, in dormitories. And there is quite an extensive literature about it, as you can imagine. So it's a continuation of our discussion yesterday about makom issues. And as we saw yesterday, it's going to draw a lot on basically calculus. You're going to basically have to add up different calculations, different factors, what's important, what's not important. As we saw yesterday, that there were some considerations that were driven by Pursumei Nisa and some were not. And in general, we would emphasize Pursumei Nisa as a consideration, but there are a few other considerations as well. So we'll move into this complex subject of the yeshivas with two words of introduction. First of all, as I said, I also want to talk about shuls, lighting in shul. I had hoped to finish that today. I'm not sure if I'll finish it today. It may spill over a little bit into next week. What I find particularly fascinating, and hopefully you'll relate to it from a Lundish perspective, is that even though the practice of lighting in shuls is a minig and is essentially a post-Talmudic practice, it's not really a sugya, but you'll see how it flows organically very much from the actual sugyas that we're talking about in a couple of ways, and that the practice of lighting in shul is very directly connected to a number of sugyas that we're currently involved in, that we've seen before. So the lumdisha component of the halakhic based akhnesis is very strong, and is probably fitting for it to be connected to this sugya, so we'll try to segue right into that. Now, so again, we may not finish that part today. Hopefully we'll start it, and maybe we'll spill over a little bit into next week. But in terms of the yeshiva issue, so we'll talk about that now. It's a highly controversial topic, and I just want to say a word of introduction to it, that there are, as you'll see, many, many different opinions, many, many different perspectives. I would like to believe, in general, and with this sugya as well, that elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim, that there is a validity to all the positions just by nature of that being the case with any machlokas, that you have a major poskim saying something that's already deserving of the seat at the table. But also, I think the sugya lends itself to that a little bit more, because as we saw with yesterday's issues as well, for the most part, and we'll discuss if it's 100% the case, but for the most part, we're talking about preferences. We're trying to figure out the ideal place to light. So it will generally not necessarily mean that if I think place A is better than place B, it doesn't necessarily mean that place B is no good. So here, I think in addition to the general elu v'elu attitude we like to try to have with machlokas v'chol Torah kula, I think this lends itself a little bit more to that type of an attitude, because for the most part we're talking about preferences. That's not 100% true. We'll try to highlight where that's not exactly the case, but even if it's not the case, then we still have the general elu v'elu, that just about all the possibilities you can come up with are endorsed at least by some major poskim, so that's something to keep in mind. But even a little bit more than that, that if it's basically a question of preference, so then that gives even more validity to the opinion that one doesn't necessarily endorse. Okay, so that being the case, so just off the bat, what do you think are the main considerations? Right, so again, if we'll frame this issue as moving from yesterday's discussion where you have a clear address, but it's a question how to relate to that address. Should it be upstairs, outside, on the floor, on the table? Where should it be? So here, where you have more than one address, or maybe no defined address, but not homeless in the sense we talked about chovos habayis, you have, you're living somewhere in a yeshiva or the like. So what type of factors do you think are the most relevant to trying to answer the question? where should it be? Should it be your house versus the yeshiva? Where in the yeshiva should it be? The yeshiva has a number of different settings. So where should it be within the yeshiva? What do you think are some of the key factors, Ephraim?
If each dorm room is considered like a house in the chatzer, like the dorm itself.
Okay, so one thing you're bringing in is the question of chatzer, right? And that we'll have to discuss specifically. We saw yesterday that on the one hand, the Gemara does relate to the chatzer as a specifically relevant place for Neres Chanukah. At the same time, there's somewhat of a machlokas, as we mentioned yesterday, whether or not the halacha of chatzer is relevant nowadays. So we'll have to factor that in. So that's one issue. Our chatzeros involved.
Adam? I spend a lot of your time seeking Pirsum in this.
Okay, so Pirsum is a factor, and maybe Pirsum will be affected by where you or others maybe spend a lot of time. What else might be a consideration? What else may influence why you'll pick one place over the other, Ephraim?
The room belongs to you.
Oh, okay, very good. Right, that's also a consideration. We also touched upon that a little bit yesterday, that there seems to be a advantage that there should be some identifiable connection between you. Is that a function of the Chovas Abayis? Is that a function of something else? Not 100% clear, but we do find that cropping up, that there's some preference that there should be a link between you and the place. Shmuley?
Where your family lives.
Okay, so that seems to be relevant also. Though here, I guess, if the question is you're in yeshiva somewhere else, so probably your family isn't necessarily more any part of that yeshiva than any other part of the yeshiva. But the family in terms of the Ikar Mitzvah is definitely, I mean, if the family is farther away.
You're in yeshiva and your family has their own house, but you technically.
Oh, okay, so the question, like, how connected are you to your household when you're not there? Okay, right? That's definitely a valid consideration.
Is that the Chovas Abayis issue?
That could be connected to the Chovas Abayis issue. I'd love to see about that as well. There's so much flying around in this issue.
Michael? I was about to say, isn't that Asana?
Maybe, right. So we'll have to talk about that also. So there are a couple of sugyas, as much as this will draw on sugyas in the middle of, there are a few sugyas we haven't seen yet that we'll have to kind of dip our toe into in order to get some kind of a perspective. Okay, any other factors? One major factor which no one's brought up yet. Yes.
Eating or sleeping?
Okay, eating or sleeping, right? That seems to be a major sugya, which is not in the context of Hanukkah and the Gemara. It's in the context of Erevin. And if you had a chance to see, it was on this morning's additional Mar Makomos. But the poskim have clearly brought it into Hanukkah. Our Gemara doesn't, but clearly the issue is meant, is understood to somehow be connected. Okay, so let's try to see how we would weigh up and how poskim have weighed up some of the various concerns. So first of all, let's start off talking about that. So let's say you live one place and you sleep in another place, which could mean a couple things, right? It could mean that maybe you don't dorm. Maybe you sleep at home, but you're in yeshiva until late at night, so you have all your meals in the yeshiva, but you sleep in one place. So then your question is coming from the fact that you have one address for sleeping and one address for eating, and they may be completely different cities. You know, there may be completely different locations. Or maybe the question is that you're doing everything in the yeshiva campus, but you have a room for sleeping, and you have a cafeteria for eating, and then the question is which within them. So the issue of defining your residence based on where you sleep versus where you eat, when those are two different places, so that's a discussion in the Gemara and Maseches Erevin, if you had a chance to see, Ayin Beis and Midbeis, Ayin Gimel and Aleph. And the way we seem to emerge from that debate is what seems to be definitive on the surface? Food, right? It's always a question what's more important in life, food or sleep. So where you eat seems to have the edge as far as defining your residence for the purpose of Erevin, what we'll call makom pita. So if that's the case, so then you see in the later poskim, not so much in our sugya, but in terms of the poskim in Chanukah, that they have brought that consideration in, and therefore there are many who assume that the main factor is, we'll look at where you eat in terms of defining where Neres Chanukah should be. So on this subject, if you had a chance to see, there was a machlokas between the Rush and the Rashba. It's not clear how much of a machlokas it is, and the Rush was quoted in the tour, if you had a chance to see, and the Beis Yosef on the side of the page quotes the Tshuvas HaRashba. Now, what did the Rush say? The Rush agrees that, yes, if you're eating somewhere else, then that should be your main place. But you should still light at home anyway. Why? Because of a different consideration. What's his consideration? Chashad. Now, cheshad is one of the sugyas that lays ahead of us rather than behind us. We haven't really seen that yet. We're going to have to dip into that a little bit in order to understand some of the positions we'll discuss today. We've mentioned it in the past, but we haven't reached that sugya yet. But we'll get a little bit of an advance. We'll have to take out a loan a little bit from the sugya of cheshad in order to appreciate some of the positions. But basically, the rasha is because of cheshad, we don't want you abandoning the house that you sleep in, so you should light there. While the Rashba, that the Beis Yosef quotes, the Rashba does not seem to worry about cheshad and says that the place where you eat is enough to fully define where you should light your candles. Now the poskim note that it's a good question whether or not this is really a concern nowadays, because it's possible that the concern of cheshad, as the Rama indicates, was really connected to the Iker Takana, that when you had lightings outside of the household, and your household was bare, you don't have a menorah outside, so that's where you find the chshad really coming up, that the chshad is brought up in the Gemara later, a house that has two doors, and one might see one door and not see the other door, so maybe both doors should have candles. But maybe nowadays, where we don't have such a din, that's again a part of our whole sugi here, the possible transfer from one status to the other. So if we don't have the hadlaka Pesach Beso nowadays, so it's not clear how much cheshad plays a role in our contemporary thinking. So if that's the case, so then maybe it could emerge that, all right, we could just follow the Rashba and say it's all about food. It's all about where you eat. However, God forbid anything should be so simple. Right? There's still what to question about that. So first of all, one could ask, and this is a discussion that's posed by the Minchas Yitzchak and his Shuvas and others, when he talks about the yeshiva dormitory question, yeshiva campus question, is that maybe this whole discussion is only relevant to somebody who has two completely distinct residences. He has a resident where he sleeps in, and then he goes a mile away to eat. But if we're talking about, let's say, different rooms in the same house, so how do we know that we have any type of preference to makom pita and makom lina? Maybe we'll just focus on pirsum, wherever there's more attention. That'll be the issue. And who knows if we have to even invoke this discussion. In which case, again, so if you're in the yeshiva where you have both those things, you're sleeping and you're eating, it's just a question of which location to emphasize. So then maybe that's not necessarily a factor. And he notes, the Minchas Yitzchak, that the Taz, which I think I did put on the list, if you saw the Taz, so the Taz does use the language chadarim when he talks about preferring one over the other. But he suggests, the Minchas Yitzchak, that maybe that's just where they're equal pirsum. So then, okay, so you have two rooms which are otherwise equal, so then which one will give more attention to? But if there's a real difference in pirsum, then maybe we'll say it's all one residence, and the place that's much more visible, that's much more public, will win, even if that's not connected to eating. Alex?
Also, wait, I don't know if this is what you're saying, but like, you wouldn't be able to necessarily distinguish between, like, there's an official cafeteria, but also most guys bring their food back to the room anyway.
Right, so we'll talk about bringing food back to the room, how much that makes a difference.
It's always
so many fascinating issues to explore over here. So that's a question as well, that maybe different rooms within the same building are not really subject to this type of consideration. And maybe also it doesn't have to be the same building, that maybe a campus is a building. You have a campus that has a lot of different buildings, but it's all one place. So there's a case to be made that all of Yeshiva University's Wolf campus will basically be considered one place. And then maybe we shouldn't emphasize so much pita over lina. So right off the bat, it seems to be that pita has an edge as a defining factor, but does that really enter into the discussion so much? It's not so clear. You have to figure out exactly what role it plays. Now, nonetheless, there were those who felt that it does make a difference. So, for example, the Chazon Ish and Varn Kotler were quoted as saying that the Makom Achila is the main place, and that's where it should be. It should be, let's say, in the in the dining room. That's the place which is considered to be makom pita, and therefore that'll be the defining factor. And there were apparently that was the minhag, and the Litvish yeshivas was brought down in such form that that was one of the considered, that was an attitude to take. Hi.
But if you're connecting it to the mandam, or I guess to the Gemara, or the days in Shulchan Aruch, that makom achila is more important than makom lina, but those are makom achilas where it was a house, where people would also be sleeping, where they would also be living. So does that necessarily line up with the cafeteria?
You could. Now, there are certainly those who question this comparison. Not necessarily from that angle per se, but there are a number of reasons to question it. Tell me if this gets to what you're getting at. For example, Reb Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuvas, so Reb Moshe says differently, because Reb Moshe, this is in the Igros Moshe in a few places, it's also quoted a number of other Sfarim pretty consistently, and the Reb Ephraim, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt, a Talmud of Reb Moshe also has this in his name, that he thought that it's really the dormitories that are the Iker, because the reason that Ephraim brought up, that the dormitories, he thinks, are much more connected to you personally than the cafeteria is. The cafeteria, everyone eats and nobody has a set seat. And even if you're going to find the yeshiva where they actually give out assigned seating by the cafeteria, presumably no one's really makbid on that and no one really is connected to that. God doesn't exist in the first place. So when it comes to a cafeteria, you don't really have a connection to the person. And the dormitory, even if there are three, four guys in the dorm room, still it's much more personal. Everyone has their own bed. So it's much more personally identified than the cafeteria. So here again, so Reb Moshe Sfara, you seem to be emphasizing on that point, not necessarily the Pearson component as much. Maybe Pearson is clearly an issue, but the idea that, by the way, Moshe has a separate shuva where he takes on the question of how much Pearson is integral to the mitzvah of Neres Chanukah, which is also going to be relevant to this question. You know, if Pearson is not so integral, so first we've got to make sure you're doing it where you're supposed to be doing it. So it's got to be your place to some extent. So it seems like that's what Moshe is emphasizing, that this is more your place than the cafeteria. I'm wondering, in general, part of my introduction before, when we started this discussion, is to what extent those who prefer one place would actually disqualify another place. So, I saw Reb Moshe in the Tshuvas and a few other places. It's not clear from his language. It's clear that he very much thinks the dormitory makes a lot more sense than the cafeteria. I don't know if that means he thinks the cafeteria is garnished. Does that mean that he thinks that that's nothing at all? I'm not clear that that's the case. It sounds like he's saying that this is a far preferable choice, although I think it's a little bit open to interpretation. Again, whether he would say a cafeteria is nothing and that's a bracha batala, or is he saying that, listen, if we have to decide what's better, so I far prefer the dormitory because it's much more personal. I think Ephraim's up first, then Shmuley.
Aren't there some Rosh Hashanah weddings, like some certain lounges and certain dorms and certain areas that aren't connected to you at all?
Right, so that's what we'll get to also. You know, that's part of the controversy. Hi.
What was the reason for Moshe tossing the Manishter in the norm?
Because that's much more, yeah, it's more connected to you. That he seems to be driven by that concern, and you find the various, for example, there are Diyukim and Rashis that you can make on our daf, which seems to talk about, in this context, the various preferences we were talking about yesterday. Right, so it could be that that's a function of Beso in general, or it could be that even without saying Beso, maybe it's a Gavra concern, but that it should be somehow connected to you, and even if it's a Gavra issue, right, that it should have some affiliation with you, and for you to light something somewhere where no one's going to know this has anything to do with you, maybe even without a bias issue. You could say it from either direction. You could say that it's a bias consideration, so it should be your bias in some sense of the word. Or you could say that even if it's a Chovas HaGavra, if it's a personal obligation, but it's got to be connected to you somehow. So maybe that's, either one would maybe push you towards looking for greater identification. So that's also an element that you see. Now, there are those also who say that there's a difference between different kinds of cafeterias. So, for example, the Yeshiva University cafeteria is open to the public. And maybe that makes things different. And once upon a time, before any of you were born, the cafeteria, and all I will say this is just a change, is that maybe there were not as many restaurants in the surrounding towns, and Teaneck was not the haven of restaurants that it is today. So people from, let's say, Teaneck would often come to the cafeteria as an outing for dinner. So, yeah, it's true. So ask your parents, it's true. So so therefore, if that's the case, so that may also define things differently, that maybe if it's open to the public, so then maybe it's harder to call that your place, and maybe it's more comparable to a restaurant. So people wouldn't assume that you should eat, you should light in the restaurant, presumably. It's not considered connected to you. Also, separately from mentioning restaurants, but even among the earlier postgame, you see that even this whole discussion about makom pita versus makom lina, it doesn't mean that you happen to be eating somewhere one night. It means that, in general, you have a place where you regularly eat. So then that place is assumed to be connected to you. But if it doesn't have a connection to you, so then that's less true. So far, the whole train of thought we've been following, whether it's makom pita, makom lina, whether it's Reb Moshe's perspective, all of it seems to address not so much the Pearson consideration, but basically first we have to ascertain that the place has some connection to you, and that's going to direct where we even get off the ground. And we mentioned just the only point about Pearson we really brought in was the Menchas Yitzchok's point that Pearson should outweigh the considerations about choosing one room over the other, that maybe this discussion is assuming they're roughly equal. But again, you still have to have some connection to that place in order to start the discussion. So I think it was Amir, then Jonathan.
What implications does Beit HaKnesset have on
this? Yeah, we'll have to get to it, yes. Yeah, so that's again our next agenda, but it's going to organically flow out of this. Okay, so, hi.
If the whole reason you have shaitas to the cafeteria, let's say because A, you eat there every night, and B, because you're paying your own money, let's say if your cab card to use it there, so why should that make it any worse if the public has access to it? If they want to pay money to eat there?
So again, the question is, I guess, how are you defining what makes it connected to you? Is it that you're there all the time, or is it that people see it as something connected to you? So if people say anyone could eat there all the time, so that's a restaurant which you happen to
frequent. You're eating there because you're paying money, so clearly you're connected to it.
Well, assuming the money may mean you're connected to the food, doesn't necessarily mean you're connected to the residents. Mm-hmm. What are you paying for? Now that might make a difference, by the way, we'll get to that also. We'll mention something slightly related to that. It may make a difference whether it's like a hotel that you pay to be there and then they give you the food, or you're paying per food. That may affect the din of achsanya, of achsanai, which we'll get to. Hi.
So this might be like a kind of an obscure question, but what if you were like working at Google and
they provide you all their food?
I was going to say your hours are until 6, so you're after Shkia, and so you have to light Hanukkah candles. So we know that Google is a publicly traded company. Does that have any din in this?
The ownership of the building, probably not. Postgame do talk about store owners who are in their store all day, who are in their place of business all day, and then maybe that might become defined as a place that they're connected with. So that's not a totally outside connection. The ownership doesn't seem to matter so much. Where you're connected with. The fact that the other people may own it doesn't seem to be that that's really such an issue, and we'll see that coming out a little bit more as well. Okay, so hi.
But you basically even go on every night if you have the light there?
No, so that's the thing. So something that's a restaurant is even, especially if you say the cafeteria open to the public takes away from its cafeteria status, so certainly a place that's officially a restaurant that doesn't have any automatic connection to anybody, even though they regularly choose to patronize that restaurant, I don't think it's really much of a slur to say that that's your house, even though, again, some of us become identified very strongly with certain establishments, but still it's a question how far you're going to go with that. So there is a suggestion, which Stipler is associated with, and Blyashev says something similar, that maybe it's Kedai, during the days of Hanukkah, you want to be Yotzei Kol HaDeis, that maybe you should have a certain amount of meals in your dorm room. So somebody mentioned that about if you take food home, take food back to the room, so then maybe you could establish that your makom lina and your makom pita are the same place. So that's a suggestion Emin and Poskim have. Reb Moshe Sternbach, in his Moedim Uzmanim, does not think this suggestion is so helpful. Why not? Because he introduces another element here. He says that the notion is not just that you happen to eat in a place, but the whole idea of saying makom pita should define your residence is a function of chashivus. It's a function of the fact that there's a certain status to the place where you eat. So therefore, even if you happen to sneak some food into your room and quickly scarf it down while you're preparing for finals, that's not going to make your room the makom pita as far as chashivas. If you never ate anywhere else, then okay, we'll have to figure that out. But if there's a place that's miyuchad for achila, and you happen to also say, well, I eat in other places also, so let's call that makom pita also. So he's saying some of the chiddush here that no, it's not just about where you happen to eat, it's about a certain chashivas that's associated with the place of eating, and therefore you can't equate that to what you happen to get bring back to your room, even if you decide to have formal meals there a couple of times a day. It's evocative. I'm wondering now whether Schnurbach comments on this also in that context. So this year, next year, as we talked about a little bit, is Yom Kippur, Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, and the whole question of Hadlakas Neiros for Yom Kippur, and the discussion of the Gemara, whether in general you light Shabbos candles for Yom Kippur, or what about especially when it's Shabbos also when it's Yom Kippur. So we talked about the question, I think we discussed this a little bit earlier, about whether if you're lighting candles on Yom Kippur, so why should it be that you light in the same place on a normal Shabbos near the dining room table? So if you're not eating anyway, so what's the point in lighting there? So on Friday night you light near the dining room table because you need it to see dinner. But if you're not eating dinner, so what's the point in lighting by the dining room table? So it could be, and I think Rosh Hashanah, if I remember correctly, maybe has a discussion in that place as well, that the dining room table is a sign of chashivas in the house. Even if it's not actually being used for a meal, there is a formality that's associated with the eating place. And therefore here as well, the makom pita is the formal place of eating, and you can't necessarily negate that by bringing food back into your room. So this again leaves us with somewhat of an open question. So what exactly are we going to prefer? Are we going to say that the makom pita is the defining point and therefore cafeterias are the ideal place to light, which has a distinguished tradition among poskim and among yeshivas? Or should we say that no, for various reasons, the cafeteria is not really definable as being linked to who you are, and therefore the dorm is a preferable setting and has advantages as far as that's concerned, and maybe should we try to be Yotze Kaladeus and somehow combine the two? Now the question was raised, so what about if you're neither in the dorm room or in the cafeteria, but you're in, let's say, some type of an entryway, some type of a lounge, let's say like we have here in the various dormitories. So as you're probably aware, so this is a highly controversial location. And just to kind of explain what some of the possibilities are, what some of the issues are concerning that location, is that on the one hand, it seems like lighting there is a reflection of the din of chatzer that we find in the Gemara. Right? The Gemara talks about having some type of a shared space that's common to a few residences, and lighting in that shared space. So it sounds like the notion of lighting in such a lounge is a fulfillment of this din of chatzer, and maybe also since everyone passes through it, so then from the person perspective, so maybe that's a very good choice. So you have both the din of chatzer from the Gemara, and it's a thoroughfare, everyone goes through it, so maybe there's a lot to be said for such a selection. Now, there are those who don't feel that that's the case. As you may have heard, that Rav Shechter Shlita, for example, is highly opposed to that location. So what factors into the equation is, first of all, we mentioned yesterday that the Chazon Ish has an opinion that the whole concept of Chatzer has changed since the time of the Gemara, and that what we may colloquially call a chatzer today is not a chatzer as was described by the Gemara. And that the chatzer in the Gemara was an actual place of hishtamshus, was a place where people actually did things. It was common to a few residences, but it was like a room in any one of their houses in terms of their actually using it. And it was only because of that status, which the Chazon Ish assumes doesn't exist anymore, that makes it a viable choice for a number of dinim, among them the ability to light Hanukkah candles there. So if you really negate the status of chatzer today, and you say that there is no such thing, and you say that these lounges don't count as the chatzer, so then it sounds like you're lighting in the street. It sounds like you're lighting in a place that really has no connection to you, and it's just a covered street, basically, and the street is not your house, the chatzar is not your house either, and then you could understand perhaps why one may take the view that it's really nothing, it's a brachah batala, this has no real connection to you. I think Shmuley was up.
Yeah. Is there any room to say that maybe like a cafeteria, which has like a lot of people going through it, and it's definitely a common space, room to say that that's a chatzar combined with the fact that it's makom lina?
So you're saying if you want to take these two cheshbonos together, you want to say, okay, let's, what's going to have a connection to you in the sense of makom pita, and maybe the cafeteria counts for that, and then it has an extra edge because it's so public and some people go through it, so then maybe it has a personal edge as well. Certainly valid, and it's certainly, again, we're adding up different considerations and trying to figure out how different parts fit together, so it's certainly, again, there were those, clearly there were poskim who preferred the cafeteria. Is it that they're factoring in also the personal angle that is considered being public as an advantage, maybe. I wonder, I'm not sure the technical definition, by the way, the word cafeteria, I don't know if I'm using it properly. I don't know if cafeteria means davka, a place where you pay for the food. Does it mean a place where everyone eats regardless of whether they have to pay per item? I don't know if different yeshivas will have different definitions as far. I don't know if the word cafeteria takes the stand in terms of that specific. They have to keep that in mind as well. I believe that it's based on the Chazon Ish, that this Tinu Chatzar doesn't exist anymore, and therefore we don't have that. Now, why would one, Jonathan, about that?
Just on that, wouldn't it be more basic to say that even the Chatzar described in the Gemara, so it's physically attached to your bias?
Well, in some dormitories it is. I mean, let's say if you're in... most of the dormitories is.
So you have a door that goes through, you can go through a hallway, this and that.
You're a couple of, this, there are things in between the chatzar.
Right.
Maybe. But you're still, you're part of that dorm, if the chatzar is your chatzar, so then you live in Reuben, I'm just picking one randomly.
You have Rosh Hashanah hallway in the, or Mavoyer in the middle.
Right. But it's all still part of the same building that you are a resident of. Presumably that should be the same thing. Okay. Hi.
Is a potential natural sakana come into play at all?
Yes. But we'll have to get to that. But yes. So, I'm not certain I think so. So, why would one still maintain that this chatzar theory is viable? So, a couple of reasons. One is that one may not accept the Chazon Ish. We mentioned yesterday that Rav Asher Weiss, for example, didn't understand why there was such a need to say that point, that even if the Messias is correct, right, even if the facts are right, that there was much more usage of the chatzar in the time of the Gemara, how do we know that that has to change, let's say, this particular din? We mentioned yesterday there were a bunch of other halachas that came up. There's a question, for example, I didn't mention this yesterday, Poskim talk about whether you should have, if you have a chatzar behind your house, should you have a mezuzah going that way? You need a mezuzah in your house anyway, because coming into the house, but maybe the chatzar is bigger and more used, so maybe you'll have a mezuzah going out to the chatzar, put it on the right side as if you're going into the chatzar, so that the Chazon Ish assumes is changed nowadays, because the chatzar used to be something that you use like part of your house, and nowadays it's not. So there may be a number of halachos that may be affected by this question, but you can make a case that maybe Neiros Chanukah shouldn't be affected, because if it's still somehow connected to you, and it's a public place where people are going through, maybe that's enough to make it a good candidate for Neiros Chanukah, and maybe you don't have to accept the Chazon Ish's distinction. So that's a possibility. Again, he also, in interpreting the Chazon Ish, so he assumed that the Chazon Ish's reason for thinking that this applies to Chanukah is because he feels that Chanukah has to be your residence, and the idea that you actually do stuff here, you don't just use it to get from one place to the other, but you would actually maybe sit down and start typing a paper in the chatzar, that it's like basically a common living room or a common den, so that therefore that makes it more your place, but nowadays maybe that's not true anymore. So one could argue in the Chazon, one might not accept the Chazon Ish, or one might go farther and one might say, listen, even if I don't accept the Chazon Ish, even if I do accept the Chazon Ish in general, and I say that the chatzeros in apartment buildings or in a courtyard setting of houses, that's not a Talmudic chatzer. But the dormitory lounge, that is a Talmudic chatzer. What's the big proof of that? One word, pajamas. Right, the people walk around in their pajamas in the chatzar. So in the dorm, they presumably do. Would they do that in their apartment building lobby? probably less light. It probably depends where they live and who they are. But the average person presumably will be fully dressed in the apartment lobby and certainly in an outdoor chatzer of a group of houses. But in the dormitory, it's a little bit more common. You know, there's a little bit more of a sense that this is all our shared space. So there is a svara to say, and I think that this is adopted by many of the Rabbanim Yeshiva as well, and that's a part of where this comes from, that even if one does subscribe to the Chazon Ish's attitude that a chatzer is not really the same chatzer nowadays, but maybe a dormitory chatzer really is, maybe that does bring us back to a standard chatzer. So it was a millisecond, but I think Amir's hand went up before Shmuley's.
Yes. Obviously that takes
over. Right, so I want to get to that also. And that was a point that Adam brought up, so let's just first lay out some of the...
No, just in terms of in response to Rav Schachter.
So we have to figure that out, but you have to figure out what kind of a role it plays.
Okay.
So we'll get to that. So in any event, so those are some considerations in terms of preferring... Question, Doug?
Would you like to say in the prior days that... if you have that check corner some pins at the house, if you have an apartment that's really high, that you light up sort of in the hallway, which would technically be a cluster, so.
Well, you could light by your front door of your apartment, right? You know, let's say even in time. Right, so like as if it was a house going into the street. So let's say if you light by your front door, inside your apartment perhaps, so then maybe that's preferable to lighting by the window and where no one's going to see it, possibly. So far, what have we talked about then? So we say, okay, so Pita versus Lina, and then the question of Chatzer itself. So all of this also assumes that there is a need for the Bnei HaYeshiva to light the menorah at all. Now, we haven't really addressed the fact that it's probably the case, and probably most poskim assume like this, maybe even all poskim assume like this, that really Meikar HaDin, the students of the yeshiva, are yotze with somebody else. And that really this whole discussion is coming on to the level of Mahadrin. Now, who is the somebody else? So, first of all, presumably one's parents are lighting in at home, and therefore the students are yotze with the parents, at least Meikar HaDin. And that's very likely the case. Now, it's theoretically possible somebody may not have parents lighting at home, but that will address many of the students in yeshiva. But even if you don't have parents lighting at home, it's still possible that yotze with somebody else. That many poskim suggest the discussion about this in Sefer Chovas Hadar, which we mentioned the other day, I think we've talked about in the past, the Sefer on Hilchas Mezuzah and Hilchas Chanukah, written by Rabbi Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy, who was a great halachic author, passed away about a year ago. So he discusses the svara, as other posts can do as well, that Bnei Beso don't necessarily have to be blood relatives. Bnei Beso could mean people who are part of your household, meaning they're connected to you, they eat with you, they share a residence with you in some practical sense. And therefore, if that's the case, so maybe the Talmidim and the Yeshiva are considered to be Bnei Beso of the Rosh Yeshiva, or of the Mashkiach, if there's some dominant personality who lives on the campus or who directs what happens on the campus, who's connected to the campus in a prominent way, and the Talmidim are...
Mashkiach.
Right, the Mashkiach maybe. The Talmidim are connected to him in some way, such as joining in his basic day-to-day life in terms of that. So therefore, one could argue that they're Yotze with his Hadlaka as well. So the different versions of who it is you're Yotze with, but it's likely that most Bnei HaYeshiva, or maybe all Bnei HaYeshiva, maybe by definition of being Bnei HaYeshiva, are Yotze Meikar HaDin with the Hadlaka of somebody else. And therefore, this whole discussion really comes on to a Mahadrin level. So, theoretically, if one is not satisfied with any of the answers, so then presumably one is still not being Mevatel, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, one is still in fulfillment on the Yikar level anyway. Now, Rav Avadji Yosef and his Tshuvas in Yechavadas, so he favors this position that one is essentially already Yotze. And he also mentions that we also don't have to come on to the Din of Achsinoi, which we haven't yet come on to, but the halacha that one has to pay into the process somehow, that one has to contribute some pruta, some coins, in order to fulfill through somebody else's household. So he says that's not the right model for this relationship. and this is a chiddush in that din. Again, we'll have to see the sugya head on, but he quotes the understanding of that din. This is what I mentioned before in response to somebody's comment, that if you have a hotel setting where you pay the guy a flat rate, and he provides everything for you, he provides all the food, and everything is paid for based on just the room itself, you're not paying per item, so then you don't need to be mishtatif bepruta. That the whole notion of being mishtatif bepruta is where the balabayis is makbid on food, things like that, where the assumption is that you'd be paying for the food, you'd be paying for the drinks, so you'll also pay to be a part of his neiros. But if you're not paying per item in general, you're connected overall, so then he doesn't think you even have to come on to this din of achsanya, of achsanoi, and that's not relevant here. Hi.
Then why is it, it might just be like a mistake in the kind of practice, but I think most guys, even though they're paying into like a dorm setting, like they'll pay specifically for the kanakia itself. Like when,
well, even they'll buy their own menorah.
Or let's say like you're being hosted by someone else, like you'll pay that person.
Right, so the question is, that person may not be your host. You know, you maybe just want to be physically possessing a menorah. But if the idea is that you are supposed to pay the host just so that you can light in this house, so this is what Ravaja says, that thing doesn't apply to a setting like this.
Specifically like a host.
Right. So he says, so Mikarat din, the Bnei HaYeshiva, are all Yotzei Red. So he doesn't think you really have to light at all. Now, if you light, he says, so then that's just Altamahadrin. And that's where the whole halacha, well, that's where the whole discussion comes in, but he's not particularly focused on it anyway because he thinks it's not necessary. And he says that one who's doing that should not make a bracha because that would be a bracha levatala. Now, that's a little bit murky because it sounds like if one's lighting out, it's mahadrin. So normally in houses when people light mahadrin, as the Ramah's version, that the individuals light their own, so they do make a bracha. So why is he assuming that in this case the bracha is not indicated? It's not really clear. If you read his discussion inside, it's in Yechav Adas and Chelik Vav. So he basically says that he thinks it's bracha of Atala to light in this setting. And he says, even though, maybe you might think not, but he quotes a few sources, but l'maisa safek brachas l'hakel, and one should not make a bracha if one lights in the yeshiva, and that may ikar hadin, it's not really necessary.
Well, he's asking for the Spartan, that probably makes sense, because the Machaber quoted Tosfos saying that it would just be one announce.
Right, so he's saying, so therefore, you don't even think, you don't come on to the Ramah's independent light. Right. That's true also. Right, so that could be. So then this is, I believe, the Sephardi approach, that there really isn't an issue of lighting in the yeshiva. Now, there is another interesting perspective, which really kind of differs radically from a lot of what we've said so far. And that's it's the opinion of Rav Abadi, who is in general a very independent thinker. So I was discussing this issue with Rabbi Simon earlier today, and he mentioned Rav Abadi's position. I haven't seen it inside. He says it's printed in his Tshuvas, which I have at home, so Blinetter, I'll take a look at it tonight, and if there's what to add, I will share it with you tomorrow. But basically, his position is as follows, as I understand it outside. And it correlates to a svara we mentioned yesterday. I mentioned, I think, towards the end of yesterday's year, that there was a suggestion in one sefer that now that everything has switched from outside to inside after the new takana, so that also fundamentally changed the nature of mitzvahs Chanukah. That the idea of it being a chovas habayis, as we discussed a few weeks ago, that was only if one is doing the Iker Takana B'Pesach Beiso. But once it's been moved inside for B'nei Beiso, for the people inside the household, so then it became a Chovas HaGavra. It became an individual obligation. So we mentioned yesterday that someone had such a Svara. So as I understand from Rabbi Simon, Rabbi Abadi has a Svara along those lines as well. And therefore he says a big Chiddush, which is also kind of as you often see with Rabadi, it's a kula and a chumra. A big kula and a big chumra at the same time. That essentially says that because that's the case, really one could light anywhere nowadays. That there isn't really any requirement that it be in any specific location, and one could basically light anywhere. Obviously, there will be some circumstantial issues sometimes, but theoretically, as far as the mitzvah of Chanukah is concerned, it could be anywhere, under the following two understandings. That the father of the household, the Iker mitzvah, who's lighting for his household members, that's how the mitzvah has morphed. Nowadays, you're lighting for B'nai Beiso, so wherever his B'nai Beiso happened to be, so then he can light there as long as his B'nai Beiso can see it. While the Mahadrin, somebody who's lighting as an individual, is lighting for himself, and he can basically light anywhere. Wherever he is, he can light, and that's really the only requirement. It's been disconnected from any Chovas HaBayis. Now that's a big kula. However, it comes out with a big chumra, and it's specifically in contrast to what our Rabbi said, and as I understood it, it's explicit disagreement with the Svardi approach, that it also means, though, that the notion that, let's say, a person's wife could light for him, or that your parents could light for you when you're not there, is no longer true. That in order for one to be connected to the family, then one has to actually be physically present. Again, this is a big chiddush. I don't think this is the way most people understand, and it deviates from a lot of what the other poskim have said, but this is his understanding that basically, l'kula, you can light anywhere, don't have to worry about what the standards are, but you actually have to be present at a lighting, even for the Iker mitzvah. You can let your parents light on your behalf if you're physically with them, and if you want to light on your own, then clearly you have to be present in order to light on your own.
Isn't the bite like a part of the bare minimum of the mizvah? Why haven't you eliminated that from
bare minimum of what? Sorry.
For the mizvah,
So he thinks not. He thinks that was only when the original takana was in place. When the din was, you have to light outside your house. So that meant it was a chovas habayis.
So what reasoning does he use to eliminate from the
when the Gemara says that we switch things, that the Gemara said originally had to be al pesach beiso, and then after the sakana, so then they said you could be on your table. So he reads that to mean, as we mentioned, others see this as well, that takes that the whole chovas habayis was a connection to pesach habayis. But once it's no longer that requirement, it's no longer a chovas habayis, and it's now switched to an individual obligation. Big chiddush.
That's assuming that the bayit is a vehicle for pesumah nisa.
Or that's assuming that was the original takana, that it should be on the bayis, and that's switched. Fascinating idea. So we have not yet said all the shitas in the yeshiva issue, but just before we get to one more, which is going to segue into the base knesset issue. And again, we'll have to carry this over a little bit Monday. Tomorrow, Parshas Vayishlach is a major, it's a brief Aliyah Shlishi, but it has some very important things in it, which, as mentioned, will have a thematic connection to some of what we spoke about in the context of Hanukkah. So make sure to be there for that. Tomorrow's discussion of Shlishi of Vayishlach. And then Sunday, we'll continue with the Malacha. Monday, we'll have to finish off this topic with the Beis HaKnesses. But we'll just kind of segue into it now in the next few minutes. So, but before doing that, so many have raised the issue of sakana and perhaps other concerns. So this is a very real concern, that if there is an actual danger, or if there is a perception of danger, or if there is an issue of gezel, that you're not permitted to use the property. We mentioned this issue in the context of Rav Asher Weiss's discussion of lighting on a airplane, where he said that even if one could establish that there is an obligation and be a possibility of lighting an airplane, it would still be a problem, because he writes that it's both a sakana and gezel from the airlines who don't allow it, and therefore one cannot fulfill anything. It's not permissible to do it, even if it was either obligatory or possible. He's against it on all three levels. It's not a chiyuv, it's not possible to fulfill the mitzvah, and it's not permissible to do it. But that third issue about permissibility is very relevant, and it's also very sobering to think about the fact and be aware that I don't believe in this yeshiva, but in many other yeshivas, many major yeshivas have had many major fires, Rahman al-Islam on Hanukkah, and some of them have changed their policies towards nearest Hanukkah because of it. So it's not something to be dismissed. It's a very serious issue, and it's an issue which, again, one does with Rav Asher writes, one presumably doesn't have the right to say, well, if it's been perceived as a sakana, I can do it and it won't be a sakana. But if you can't have everyone doing it, then the sakana issue applies to the individuals as well. Now, that being said, so then it depends on how you understand the various considerations here. So if we're talking about preferences, that, well, I'd prefer this place this location is also valid. So then, okay, so then if Sakana rules out one location, then you should go to a different location. But if you believe that any location, let's say, for example, if you believe the lounge is completely invalid, if you believe that it's like lighting in the street, so then it may be a sakana to light anywhere else, but that'll just mean, okay, you don't have any options. And if you don't have any options, so then again, so then the notion that you're probably yotze the ikra mitzvah with either the parents or the administration of the yeshiva, which seems to be, I guess Rav Abadi would disagree, but pretty much every other posek seems to probably acknowledge on some level, so then that would be the approach, that if there's no safe way to do it in a way that you feel is a fulfillment of the mitzvah, so then that'll mean that, okay, so then you'll rely on the fact that you're yotzei with the parents. If you believe that the other possibilities are options, but let's say you believe that the cafeteria is an option, but the dorm room is better. We said, for example, we weren't sure how to read Rav Moshe's position on this, so if the dorm room is considered to be a sakana, so then we'll say, okay, you'd prefer it to be the dorm room, but if the cafeteria is an option, so then it becomes the best of the remaining options, and that would make sense as far as that's concerned. So putting all that together, so how are we going to make our decisions? So first we'll establish then what's a viable approach based on safety and legality and the like, and then within that, so what is at least a valid option as far as being connected to you in some degree, and then once we've figured out what our range of options are, so then whatever is either most beforesome or most connected to you, it'll be a little bit of a difference of opinion as to what to emphasize most, and presumably there are a lot of variables within that. Now, that being said, we'll have to carry this over, but I'll just lay the issue out, that there are distinguished yeshivas. Among them, let's say Tells, where Tells also, I believe, had a fire, a pretty bad fire many years ago in Cleveland. So I believe, I'm not sure if this is factually accurate, but at least for the purposes of this discussion, we'll work off this premise, that they rely on lighting in the base medrash. So how exactly does that work? How does lighting in the base medrash work? And there is a discussion about this in the Tshuvas. And the Chuvas is a very renowned Talmud Chacham, author of many Svarim today, named Rav Yitzchak Sarotskin. He's the author of many halachic works. He has works where he talks about Pesukim in a little bit more of a textual sense, called Rinas Yitzchak. He has many Svarim called Vuras Yitzchak. Very well-known author, and his name is Sarotskin, meaning that he is, I believe, the son of Rav Fal Baruch Sarotskin, who was Tells of Rosh Yeshiva in Cleveland, and he has a discussion about this in a sefer in Chanukah. So he himself, I believe, is a Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood, in the city of Lakewood today, but from his lineage, he is from the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, and the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, Baruch Sarotskin, is the son of Rav Zalman Sarotskin, who we often quote in Chumash, Seir in Shir and Parsha Shir, who is the author of the Oznayim Mutar, the Lutzker Rav, very beautiful sefer on Chumash. So the grandfather was Rav Zalman Sarotskin, the son was Rav Fal Baruch Sarotskin, and the grandson is Rav Yitzchak Sarotskin. So Rav Yitzchak Sarotskin, and the Gevurah Yitzchak, he has a tshuva, which is not the normal style of the sefer, but he says, how do we explain what happens in Tells that everyone is yotze through lighting in the base medrash? So we'll have to postpone the conclusion of this topic until we've discussed base Knesset, but just to introduce that topic a little bit. So essentially, he says that the base medrash is, at least on the surface, treated like the base Knesset, like the same way we light in shul, so we also are able to lighten the base medrash in that category. Now the problem is, the attitude we normally have is that one is not in fulfillment by lighting in shul. We light in shul for some other reason, but it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Neris Chanukah on a personal level. So how is this going to be effective as far as trying to accomplish a personal obligation? You could say, all right, it's kedai to lighten the base medrash. It's no worse than a shul. It's no different than a shul. So if we lighten shuls, we should lighten the batei medrash as well. But how is that going to help in terms of anyone's personal fulfillment, especially when we generally understand that one is not in fulfillment by lighting in shul? So we'll just start this topic a little bit. So basically, the minig to light in shul is essentially a minig. It's recorded in Shulchan Aruch, as you had a chance to see. It's recorded in earlier sources as well. And there are a number of different reasons that are given. And again, this really ends up floating or flowing organically out of sugyas that we've spoken about, which is a particularly beautiful idea. So what reasons do you find, let's say in the Beis Yosef and others, for the practice of lighting in shul? So one approach is that this is similar to the idea of making kiddush in shul. And it could be similar in a couple ways. The question is, why do we make kiddush in shul nowadays? So in the time of the Gemara says in the 10th parak of Pesachim, that we made kiddush in shul because there were people who ate in the shul. That there were poor people who didn't have anywhere else to go, and they would be supported by eating in the shul. So therefore, because of kiddush makom suta, so we made kiddush in shul Friday night, so that they should have kiddush for their meal. Which leads then the postman to question, so why do we carry on this practice if we do? Different shuls have different minhagim nowadays. In Eretz Yisrael, it's less prevalent to have kiddush recited in shul. In America, it's more prevalent. But the whole discussion in the literature, why do we continue this practice if it's based on that? So a separate discussion. We'll touch upon it a little bit. But so if that's the case, so then maybe this is similar, that just like we're taking care of the orphan in shul, that's become their bias for now. So we'll make kiddush for them, and we'll also light Hanukkah candles for them. Maybe that's why it's there. Others have a different approach. It's also quoted in Nosei Kelim and the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, that maybe we should say that it's simply a different practice of pursuing Nisa. That we accepted a minig, that we want to publicize the miracle in a more public venue. So we took on an additional practice of not only lighting in our houses, but lighting in the shuls as well. And it's interesting that there are those, you find this, the Beis Yosef quotes this as well, that there are those who explain kiddush and shul from that perspective. So which one is the cause, and which one is the siba, and which one is the mesavid? So the first opinion, we said, just like you make kiddush and shul to help with the guests, so you should light Hanukkah candles and shul to help with the guests. This one is coming from the other direction, that we have an institution of Hanukkah candles and shul because it's a way to do things in public and to be in the mefarsim. So too, we should also make kiddush and shul as a pirsum of kiddush. So which one is the cause for the other? Two different versions, both of which may link the practice of kiddush and shul and the practice of neiros and shul. And the rivash is particularly fascinating as kind of the next stage of our sugya that we started on Monday, started talking about whether there's been a shift in the takana from Pesach Beso to nowadays. So the rivash, and if you saw, I put it in the Marmakomos knowing it would be hard to find, so I put it at the very end of the Marmakomos, so just anyone who's saw everything else already can then spend time hunting it down if they want. On HebrewBooks.org, the printing is not so good, so I didn't want to send out a link. It would be hard for anybody to read. But anybody has access to a better printing of the Tshuvas HaRivash. So the Tshuvas HaRivash has an understanding that since nowadays we don't have the ability to fulfill the Pirsum HaNeis that would come from lighting up Pesach Beso, so we shifted it over. So in our houses we do it privately for our household members, but we still have a public pirsum by having our central location, having our shuls have a hadlaka take place there. So, fine, that's all very well and good, and there's a lot to say about that, and God willing we'll say it, I guess, on Monday. But how does this help if the assumption is that we're not yotze with that hadlaka on a personal level? So the question you have to ask is, so why are we not yotze on a personal level? And the Gra and the Rivash himself talks about this, but the Gra basically quotes two reasons why we're not yotze. One is because, maybe we'll say, it's a chovas habayis, and this is not your bias. So then we have to figure out again, has that changed? To what extent is it your bias? Is there a difference between the yeshiva and the shul? That's an avenue we'll have to pursue. And the second question, the second factor that's brought up, is because of chashad. That to say that we could let people light in shul and therefore not light at home, so we've seen a concern about chashad in the past, and maybe that's the reason why we still tell people to light at home, even though they light in shul. So that leaves open two major avenues for discussion. One is that, does that mean that the chashad concern that says light on other, for example, in the Gemara says that light on your other door, so people shouldn't think your other door is your only door, does that mean if you don't do this, you're not yotze? Is that what chashad means? That you should light in both places, and until you do that, you're not yotze? In other words, the takana of Ner Chanukah was formulated that you're only yotzei when you do it in all the places that somebody might suspect you of having to do? Or should you say that, no, it's not about that. It's that you're yotzei wherever you're yotzei. There's a separate din that you shouldn't be susceptible to suspicion, so you should also light somewhere else, which would affect the question also if you make a bracha on such a hadlaka, which is a machlokas, as we'll hopefully get a chance to discuss. So one question to ask is chashad a real factor in saying you should not be yotze in a way that still leaves something to be desired in the chashad department? And also a topic we mentioned in the beginning of today's year is that it's not clear if chashad is a factor nowadays. That maybe nowadays, if we're not lighting Pesach Beso, so maybe we don't worry about chashad as much, and therefore maybe there's room to say, all right, on some level you could be yotze with the shul slash the base medrash, and maybe there's what to talk about. So we'll have to more fully discuss that, and we'll first try to understand as much as we can about the hadlak and the base akneses, and then after we've seen that more fully, we'll try to come back to this question, is there any basis in the base akneses hadlaka to validate the base medrash of the yeshiva as a venue for the yeshiva students? Just a quickly chazan, and we'll dive mincha. Just a quickly chazan we spoke about, so we consider the question of somebody who has more than one address or not defined address, such as a yeshiva student. We talked about the whole general machlokas, whether pita or lina, eating or sleeping defines a residence. We raised the question whether or not it makes a difference if it's all basically the same place, just a question of which one is more, and then the question of how Pearson factors into that, the question of whether cafeterias could even qualify, or are they too disconnected from any personal status, the question of preferences within that, and the question of whether you could be yotze kol hadeis, whether that's a valid mahalach to think about, the question of chatzer, whether chatzer presents a possibility for a dormitory lounge to count. Should we say there's no chatzer b'zman hazeh? Should we say there is chatzer b'zman hazeh? Should we say even if there isn't, the dormitory lounge definitely is because of the pajama factor? And then we discussed also whether or not there's really even a chiyuv for b'nei yeshiva delighting at all. Most seem to assume not, that they're yotzei the ikar mitzvah with someone else, either the parents or the Rosh Yeshiva, and how that affects it. Sephardi practice like a vavaja is not to light in yeshiva, and questionable if you do want to light on your own, presumably not to make a bracha. And the mention of a body's unique approach that the whole thing changed, the kula v'chumra, that nowadays the balabayas can light anywhere where his family members can see for the ikar mitzvah, the mahadrin, anyone could light anywhere, but the chumra means everyone has to be present at a lighting in order to fulfill one version or the other. And then we discussed the very important factors, sakkada and gezel, that will rule out certain options, and then either will mean you have no options if you don't validate the other options, or it means that whatever is left will be the preference if you acknowledge that they are possibilities. And then we discussed basically the approach in Natels and many other yeshivas to use the base medrash as a venue, and the question if that's comparable to the base knesset, so then don't we have a problem because we assume you're not yotze with the base knesset? So we discussed three reasons why the minhag of the base knesset has developed, either because to help guests who might be there, or a new version of Pearson, or to replace the kind of lighting outside, and then we'll have to go into that more. But then the question is, oh, we still have the assumption that we're not yotze with the shul, and the question is two possible reasons. Either it's a chovas habayis issue, which may possibly be revisited, or maybe it's a chashad issue, and then that left open two questions. Is chashad really something that invalidates what you do otherwise? And also, is it a concern that we have nowadays? So that we'll have to pick up with on Monday again. Tomorrow, very important, the third Aliyah of Vayishlach. Make sure to be there for that. And now who's going to lead us in Mincha?